If you've been following the real estate columns in the media recently, it would have been hard to miss stories about mortgage stress and about rising interest rates. Of course, it's the same property pessimists chasing a headline who are giving biased views on their preconceived ideas that our property markets are about to crash, and these are often backed up by very small sample sizes of data. So in today's show, Dr. Andrew Wilson and I will discuss not just our views, but those of the Reserve Bank, so that at the end of our chat, you'll have a good idea about the direction of interest rates in the medium term. We're also going to discuss a comment by Assistant Reserve Bank Governor Lucy Ellis, who recently lashed out at the federal government suggesting negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts essentially encourage speculative investing, and that's what's fueling our property price growth at the moment. Really? Now, if you're a subscriber to this podcast for a while, or you've been following my blogs or my YouTube videos, you'd know for the last 3 years or so, I've recorded a weekly Property Insider video chat with Dr. Andrew Wilson. And his assessment, his forecasts about our economy and our property markets have been remarkably accurate. So whether you're a beginning investor or an experienced investor, I'm sure you're going to benefit from my chat with Dr. Andrew Wilson today, because this is the audio of one of our recent Property Insider videos. Now, I'll leave a link in the show notes so you can see the charts that support the information we're going to share with you. But in general, that won't be necessary. Andrew explains his position well. And I'm going to be sharing my regular mindset message, where I'll be telling you why being rich is a choice. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Despite all the bad news in the media, there's also been lots of positive news over the last few weeks. While the easing of the COVID-related restrictions won't come quickly enough for many of us living in Victoria and New South Wales, at least now there's a roadmap that aims to balance the health challenges and the social and economic challenges brought about by the lockdown. Then, of course, we dodged a recession last quarter, and now the official ABS figures show that unemployment fell to 4.5% in August, down from 4.6% in July. This is, of course, down from that 22-year peak of 7.4% just over a year ago in June 2020, and it reflects a continual improvement since Australia's unemployment rates now return to pre-pandemic levels. At the same time, our property markets keep performing strongly, and it seems that Australia's fast approaching its first target, 70% of those aged 16 and above having a single COVID vaccine. Overall, we're doing much better than those property pessimists and the negative Nellies predicted not that long ago. And today, Dr. Andrew Wilson is going to share some updated property statistics that show where our property markets are going to be heading. But if you dig deeper in below the surface of some of those Australian Bureau of Statistics figures, there are some causes for concern. And that's what I want to discuss today with Australia's leading housing economist, Dr. Andrew Wilson, Chief Economist of My Housing Market. Hello, Andrew.
Good morning, Michael. We're well and truly into the spring selling season now. In fact, we're heading towards the end of the first month of the spring selling season, and it's certainly been a very positive opening to the season, and notwithstanding, of course, that we do have those constraints from COVID restrictions.
That is interesting, considering how we are hamstrung, how well the markets have done. And I want to talk about that in a moment, but I'd like to start off maybe talking a bit about unemployment, because Officially Australia's unemployment rate's the lowest level in almost 13 years, despite half the country being in lockdown. However, those figures don't really seem to reflect what's happening on the ground, where things have been getting worse for Australian workers. The headline unemployment rate sounds good. It's been falling in August, but as the lockdowns were implemented, more Australians, they're working fewer hours or no hours, or underemployment's risen. What's your take on what's happening as businesses are closing their doors and not being able to employ people?
These are the intricacies, Michael, of the unemployment rate model. What we've seen, even though the headline rate has fallen, it's fallen particularly as a product of fewer people in the workforce, notably, of course, in New South Wales, which is in lockdown. So the actual participation rate, which measures the proportion of the population that's either in work or looking for work, has fallen quite sharply. And of course, that's no surprise. We saw the same thing occur last year. So what it means is the pie has actually shrunk. And that includes, of course, the number of unemployed. So the number of employed fell and the number of unemployed fell as well. But that was because those that were unemployed actually left the workforce because one of the factors that has allowed that to occur or motivates the unemployed to leave the workforce is that their mutual obligations that they have to qualify for their JobKeeper allowance is put on hold during the lockdown period. They don't have to be registered as unemployed to still be a beneficiary. And that means that the number of unemployed fell, the number of employed fell. So the pie fell from our workforce, from what we measure the number of unemployed from, and that meant that the unemployment rate fell. And also the number of hours worked was also sharply lower, and that's no surprise. So really the national rate was primarily affected by a sharp decline in the participation rate in New South Wales. And of course, this is not to be surprised, and we will see a similar outcome from Victoria when we get the next lot of data. Of course, Victoria has increased the severity of its lockdown since those last data was released, which of course was the August. It's a great result, 4.5%, but when we look a little closer, Michael, our workforce has shrunk considerably from those that have been discouraged from finding a job or looking for a job, and that's made the unemployment rate look pretty good, but it's not a positive result.
Interestingly, over the last week, a number of the regular property pessimists, so they're doing the rounds of the media again, Andrew. They're chasing headlines. They're telling anyone who's prepared to listen that many Australians are going to fall into mortgage stress when interest rates rise. And they're saying that this is going to occur sooner rather than later. However, once again, Governor Lowe just came out and said, that's just not going to happen. He seems to find it difficult to understand why the market is pricing in rate rises in 2022, 2023. And he again reiterated that it's not going to be when inflation hits the target of 2.5 to 3%. It's got to stay there for some time. And I think the other interesting thing he again reiterated was that rising house prices aren't really of a concern to the RBA at the moment.
Well, why would they be? I mean, it's not in their remit anyway, the housing market. And they've had their fingers burnt by getting involved with APRA and Treasury with those notorious macroprudential policies of 5 years ago that really did and continue to create significant disturbances in our housing markets and our economy. So they've washed their hands of the mess that to some degree that was created through those really misinformed policy positions. Michael, the debt bomb's been waiting to blow up for, what is it, 4 or 5 years now. It's the headline that keeps on giving. Perhaps we need the media just to have a little bit of a clearer think about what they're actually printing, because this stuff is cloud cuckoo land stuff and it keeps coming back. It had been a little quiet for a while, but I noticed that the debt bomb proponents are now attaching themselves to mortgage facilitators in the hope that people will buy this nonsense and change their mortgages, lock in fixed term mortgages, because they're feared of higher interest rates. And as you said, the Reserve Bank governor has come out yet again to say that this is just not going to happen. And people tend to buy these headlines without a lot of thought. But look, read my lips, interest rates aren't going to rise anytime soon. We're talking years, not months. The Reserve Bank has said 2024. It's not just about inflation. And again, I'm perplexed by the number of economists who don't understand monetary policy and how it works, that keep focusing on solely on inflation. We're likely to get higher inflation over the foreseeable future for a number of reasons. We are coming from a low inflation adjustment period, although that will be again ameliorated by current lockdowns. But we've also got some building inflation, particularly in construction costs, which will work into that headline rate. But the point is, it's only half the story, Michael. We can have inflation till the cows come home and it won't mean higher interest rates unless we're getting a corresponding increase in incomes, which we haven't had for over a decade. In fact, no advanced economy has had higher incomes generated through lower interest rates since the GFC. So what's going to change now? Well, nothing's going to change now. We may have some relief because of lack of competition from migration, but that's not evident now. We've had a year now of virtually no international migration, and we still haven't had a tick up in incomes growth. We need to have incomes growth and inflation to even think about raising interest rates. And as you said, Michael, we wouldn't have it just for one quarter. We need to have a consistent period of strengthening inflation and higher incomes for the Reserve Bank to even think of raising interest rates. Because the real conundrum, and again, please, economists, go back to your micro and macro textbooks and have another quick read of them just to inform yourself of the relationship between incomes and inflation and monetary policy, because the nightmare for the Reserve Bank would be if we had higher inflation and flat incomes, because that would mean, of course, that real incomes were falling. And that would be obviously a hit to the economy, to consumerism, to business confidence right across the board. So the Reserve Bank, would the last environment that they'd be considering raising interest rates was if we had flat incomes, higher inflation, because that would certainly have a clear impact on the economy. So we just keep saying the same old things here, Michael, don't we?
Yeah.
It's been year after year. And I guess it's one thing for the headline chasers in the media to keep speculating on higher interest rates sooner rather than later. We've just got to keep our fingers crossed that the Reserve Bank don't buy into this nonsense.
I hope they don't. But there was another interesting comment from the Reserve Bank over the last couple of weeks. Reserve Bank Governor Lucy Ellis lashed out at the federal government. She suggested it was actually negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts encouraging speculative investments that are fueling our current property prices. Andrew, I found that really interesting comment at this time when the number of investors is well below historic averages. And in fact, the government has been going out of its way to support first home buyers. And this market so far, this boom that she's talking about, has really been led by owner-occupiers.
Absolutely, Mike. I think the Reserve Bank would be well advised to stay out of housing market analytics. They've had their fingers burnt consistently. Lucy Ellis, I remember not that long ago, predicted that we'd seen the end of double-figure prices growth in Australian capital cities. Well, gee, that one's hasn't really exactly turned out as Lucy predicted. And I think you're absolutely right, of course. We've had the lowest level of investor activity in this recent market that we've had in history. It has started to rise, but investor market share is around about 25% of total residential lending at the moment. It is rising, but the long-term averages are around 34%. So even though investor activity is increasing, it's increasing from a very low base and still well below long-term average levels. And if we are starting to see the end of the strong price growth cycle, we are only talking about a quarter of the market, Michael, that investors are participating in at the moment. So I don't think it's going to be enough on its own, that proportion, to continue to fuel the level of prices growth that we have at the moment. And of course, if negative gearing and tax depreciation and capital gains discount was such a nirvana for investors, why haven't they been around for the last 3 years? They've disappeared despite all those wonderful benefits that the Reserve Bank seems to think fuels outrageous property speculation. It just doesn't add up on the data. In fact, the consequences of decline in investor numbers, the record decline in investor numbers, which was a direct result of those APRA actions that created an investor credit squeeze, what we've seen is those consequences, which I clearly predicted at the time, particularly on the supply side, despite HomeBuilder, which has created a boom in houses over the last 12 months, we're still 16% on an annualised basis below the peak new dwelling approval levels of way back in 2016. So we're still undersupplying our market in terms of new property. And of course, if we hadn't have had the curtailment of or the closing of borders, we really would be starting to see issues of housing shortages. But we are starting to see housing shortages in the rental market, Michael, because that constraining effect of the APRA credit squeeze on investors and the obvious collapse in investor numbers has created a chronic shortage of rental properties in our capital city markets, particularly houses. And we're now seeing rents going through the roof in a number of capital city markets. In fact, all capital city markets, the house rents are rising quite sharply, except for Melbourne. And Melbourne, of course, has some issues in migration, but Melbourne's still a market where it's still much in favour of landlords. Vacancy rates are all quite low for houses in our capital city markets, Michael, and we'll continue to see that. And despite the marginal increase in investor activity as a reflection of market share, it's not going to fix the undersupply of rental properties, and that is a real cause for hardship. And it's just on two sides of the coin there. We've created an undersupply of new dwellings and an undersupply of rental properties, all as a consequence of those experimental macroprudential policies that were introduced in 2016 and then revisited again in 2018. And these issues are going to take a long time to fix, particularly once we get borders opening up again, Michael.
Sure, you can see how the shortage of properties is going to keep pushing up property values. In the meantime, there's also been a shortage of properties for sale for obvious reasons. Who'd put their house on the market when you couldn't get people to come and inspect? And since most sellers are also buyers, when you weren't sure that you could buy another property. But I think there's been a change in sentiment from vendors recently, and they're now coming back to the markets, Andrew.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the consequences of the recent positivity in regard to the outlook for COVID restrictions, Michael. We do have now a pathway to, I guess, Freedom Day in Melbourne and Sydney. People are a lot more positive about the outlook. The Victorian Premier has announced that he will be easing the restrictions on property inspections, still pretty tight, but nonetheless, people can now inspect properties. Auctions are still banned, open air auctions. But I think what we've seen as a result of that over the last week is a surge in new listings nationally. And I think that's part of the spring vibe, but very much so part of the positive outlook for sellers that there will now be more of a normalised environment for property inspections, not just in Sydney, but also in Melbourne. And this is resulting in a very big increase in new listings over the last week. And new listings are now tracking considerably higher than where they were at the same time last year. And we must remember that at the same time last year, Melbourne was in the depths of lockdown. So there's no surprise that new listings are higher than a year ago. But it's a real, I guess, spring in the market, Michael, new listings coming in. It's what we expect this time of the year, but I think it's just a stronger rebound because of the lockdown that we've had in August and moving into September, but driven, of course, by some more positive news in terms of the functioning of the property market.
That's a good sign. It'll be interesting to see what the depth of the market is and how those properties are now going to be taken up by the buyers there. But yes, again, remembering that many of these sellers are going to be buyers also, they're in the market. So the depth of buyers seems to be there, particularly at the auction markets, Andrew.
Yeah, look, good point, Michael. And the auction markets reflecting that rise in new listings, another very strong weekend. In fact, a strengthening weekend for our auction markets. But yes, numbers are low in Melbourne, but given that they were basically zero a year ago, it shows how the Melbourne market has changed in 12 months, even in the depths of lockdown. There's a significantly higher number of transactions that are occurring, and that, of course, is in the online environment. But it also shows that people are really just waiting for the gates to be lowered, Michael, and the market will be up and running in Melbourne. And we've certainly seen early signs of that now with that surge in new listings. And obviously, it's a little bit of a retarded, I guess, spring selling season, but not too much. And it's certainly looking like it's ready to roar back again in terms of the overall number of properties in the marketplace, because that new listings data, I thought, was particularly instructive.
Well, putting all that together, it looks like the year is going to finish up on an even higher note than anyone would have expected at the beginning of the year. So we'll be back each week to give our thoughts and commentary on the market. Thanks for your time, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks very much, Michael.
I hope you got some benefit from my chat with Dr. Andrew Wilson. And if you did, please remember that we record a weekly Property Insiders video where only occasionally do I place the audio onto this podcast channel. So go to YouTube, look for Michael Yardney, and subscribe. Click that little bell icon so YouTube tells you every time a new show comes out. Or you can go to propertyinsiders.info, which will take you to the same place. Now, if you agree with Andrew Wilson and me that interest rates are going to be low for a while, now is a great time to take advantage of that. Because if you think about it, you can borrow $1 million for $28,000, $30,000 a year. Now, I'm not saying you can borrow $1 million, but whatever the bank's going to lend you, with interest rates as low as they are today, it's never been cheaper to hold onto investment-grade properties. And considering how low the holding costs are, it's actually never been cheaper to manage to own investment-grade properties. But I'm to keep saying the word investment-grade because as this cycle finishes, some properties are going to keep increasing in value and others are going to languish. So now's the right time to make sure that you get yourself set for the next stage of this cycle and for the years beyond. Don't just think a year or two ahead. You've really got to think decades ahead and own the right properties. And that's where my team at Metropole can help you. Why not go to metropole.com.au and find out how we help by starting with putting a plan together, a strategic plan to help you plan your asset creation journey. Because remember, property investment isn't just an event. You don't go off and just buy a property. Well, you shouldn't, even though many people do. It's part of an ongoing process. It's actually got to be done in the right order. And that's how we start at Metropole, by with getting a plan together for you to help you plan to become the person you plan to become. And then we'll help you implement it. You may use our financial planning, property advisory, buyer's agency, property management, renovations, development division. And of course, we also help business people with Mark Creedon with our Business Accelerator Mastermind. So why not go to Metropole, find out our range of services, and have a chat with one of my team to discuss your options, metropole.com.au.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
Believe it or not, being wealthy is a choice. Now, I'm not sure that when I first read this, I really understood it. But when I did get the power of that statement, it made a big difference to me. Look, I probably read it in a book like one of Rob Kiyosaki's books. However, I do remember thinking, that can't be true. It's not that simple. You can't just choose to be rich. But then over the years, as I learned from my mentors, and then I also studied the psychology of success, I discovered that Kiyosaki was actually right, and I was wrong. Yes, being wealthy is a choice. Over the years, I've learned that becoming rich begins with something as simple as the thoughts that you put in your head. Wallace Wattles first wrote about it in The Science of Getting Rich, and T. Harv Eker's tweaked the words a bit in his book Secrets to the Millionaire Minds. But they both taught me that your thoughts lead to your feelings lead to your actions, and your actions lead to your results. I'll repeat that again because it's important, because your inside world controls your outside world. Your thoughts lead to your feelings lead to your actions, and your actions lead to results. Of course, your thoughts are reflected in the vocabulary that you choose to use. So I've heard others put it this way: your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions become your habits, and your habits become you. Because the words you use, the ones you use out loud, and the words you have in your head, you know, the little voice inside your head, they're pivotal points between the thoughts and your actions. The words that you use have a surprisingly profound impact on how much wealth you obtain. So I'd like to just go through five scarcity mindset phrases that I hear people use, and I'm also going to explain to you some abundant mindset phrases you could use instead. Because if you tend to use scarcity vocabulary, it's going to be nearly impossible for you to obtain real wealth. So let's run a little check on the words you use. Which of the following you're more likely to say or to think to yourself? Number one, the scarcity one is, I want to be debt-free. The abundance mentality is, I want to be financially free. You see, no one shrinks their way to wealth. No one ever got rich paying off their mortgage or paying off their car. So being debt-free isn't the answer. On the other hand, those who embraced good debt and used leverage to buy income-producing growth assets like residential real estate, they're the ones that developed financial freedom. Okay, the set of statements number two. The scarcity statement says, live below your means. The abundant way of thinking is, expand your means. Now, I understand why people say live below your means. Sure, you must spend less than you earn, otherwise you're always going to be in debt. But the point of becoming wealthy is to live an abundant life and to be able to enjoy the good things in life, including giving back to your family and giving back to the community. So rather than living within your means, why not expand your means? Focus on production, not on reduction. Okay, scarcity statements number three. I must work hard, or something like I must even make my money work harder for me. But the abundant way of looking at it is I must make other people's money work hard for me. It can be a stunning revelation for you to learn that getting your money to work for you will not create wealth. You just can't save your way to wealth. Instead, ethically employing the money of other people, of your tenants, of the government, of the banks, and now you have suddenly the ingredients for true wealth creation by using compounding and leverage. Let's look at another set of statements. One of them, the scarcity statement first, and then the abundance statement. The scarcity statement says, compound interest is magical. I'm sure you've heard that before, but abundant people think differently. Leverage is magical. As I said, you can't save your way to wealth. Even at a reasonable rate of return, compound interest only has a chance of providing you an, adequate retirement when you get older. But it'll never give you real wealth. On the other hand, leveraging, using other people's money, gives you the return on investment from their capital working for you, not just yours. And this last set of statements I'd like to have a look at, let's build a budget and stick to it, while the abundance statement would be, let's make a cash flow statement. You see, to me, the word budget implies, frugality, scrimping, saving, cutting back. You can only cut back so much of your spending, and then you end up living a life that degrades the quality that you deserve. And it gives you a lifestyle of time wasted you'll never get back. Instead of sticking to a budget, I'd be suggesting you build a property investment portfolio that'll increase your asset base and in time deliver you multiple streams of income. That's going to increase your income potential, isn't it? Scarcity or abundance begins with your thoughts, begins with your words. So which life do you really want to design for yourself? One of scarcity or one of abundance? As I stated right at the beginning, you do actually have a choice if you want to become wealthy. Let me leave you with a last statement. A rich man digs for gold, while a poor man is concerned with the cost of the shovel. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Andrew, and if you did, why not share it with somebody who you think would also benefit from some factual knowledge about what's ahead for our property markets? There's a share button on all the podcast apps, or just tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast, or tell the world by leaving a review. I'd really appreciate you helping me in my quest to make more Australians financially fluent. Now, you can catch me in between these regular podcasts on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. And why not join my private Facebook group? Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group, where every day I'm going to leave you some little snippets, something I don't leave elsewhere. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?